now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. How are you doing today? It is Friday, and if nobody has ever said this to you this week, let me be the first to say, welcome to December. Here we are. We are, you know, hopefully the light is at the end of the tunnel. We can round out this, whatever this year was, you know, say goodbye to 2020 and look on the horizon to 2021 with a renewed hope and energy and peace. But it has certainly been a whirlwind of a year. I don't know about you, but the time has sped up. And a lot of energy flying around in the world, and we've just been through a lot collectively as humanity. So, but anyway, we are here. We are here together today. So I am very excited to be with you here every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you're on the West Coast, noon Pacific Time. Each and every week, these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, and all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, relationships that we have with others, and certainly our relationship that we have with God or the divine. And this also holds a very special place in my heart, just this integration of the spirituality and mental health. This is something that I've been involved in for many, 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 many years, and I am a firm believer in that if we are faithful to this integration of these aspects to ourselves, sooner or later, there will result a wonderful transformation that's going to occur in us, and it will show up in our relationships. Well, I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you want more information about me, or if you want to leave me comments about today's show, please do. I am very interested in your thoughts on today's topic. We're going to be looking at dreams, and what does that mean for us? But if you want more information about me, please visit the website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, all one word. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you would like to be part of the show, please call in. I'll give you the number here. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And these broadcasts are podcasted, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back in through the archives and listen to previous shows. So I certainly invite you to call in, and I'll be taking your calls in the second half of the show today, because I really want to hear your experiences about your dreams or insights that you have received from your dreams. So, but before we get to the dreams, I just want to say that if you're new to the program, welcome aboard. I'm always excited for new listeners. And I also like to say that I believe that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything we need in this life in terms of our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, personalities, character traits, and so forth. However, as we go along in life and maybe we experience some very unpleasant things, perhaps we are emotionally wounded at times or even physically wounded or psychologically damaged, we may try to hide our giftedness, that uniqueness about us, because for one reason or another, perhaps when we were smaller, that we were shamed into thinking that there is nothing more to us. And what are those messages that we've just kind of taken on and said that there's nothing more to me than what other people have described about me? Or we push our giftedness way down so that others can't see it because we just don't see any value in it ourselves. You know, maybe you were told that you were never going to amount to anything. So at any rate, the damage is that we definitely do not realize our giftedness. And we end up going through life just coming from a place of woundedness in our relationships instead of that place of healing and wholeness and hachetas, that uniqueness that we all have. And ironically, what I've been thinking about over the past couple of weeks, and I've been pushing it off, and maybe over the holidays I'll sit down and write on this because I feel like another book is coming. But I want to also say that when we discover our uniqueness, whenever we discover our giftedness and our strengths and our skills, that when we realize this, it's always for the betterment of others. You know, our giftedness and our uniqueness isn't meant for us to hoard or hide from others, but those things are certainly meant to be used and shared in a way in which brings about healing and actually gives permission for other people to then explore what is unique about them, so that they too can come from a place of healing, a place of wholeness, instead of the usual place of woundedness. So there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And all in all, this is what reclaiming authenticity is about. Just finding the courage within ourselves to reclaim that which has always been in us from the beginning. So how is your heart today? I hope it's well, and I hope you are well. I hope that if you are struggling, even in the slightest way today, that you'll find rest, you'll find comfort, you'll find the peace that you need. And as I said, welcome to December. It's going to be a busy month indeed. Here we are at the final push of 2020. And all I ask is that you just don't become too busy in all that you have to do, that you miss out on the joy, the peace, and the love of the season. So please do take time for yourself and enter into that inner space of gratitude. And please, when you are tired, take time to sleep. It's not only a great way to provide the rest to our physical bodies, but also we allow ourselves to enter into a time of dreaming, which ironically brings us to the topic for today. To sleep, perchance to dream, and oh, what dreams may come. So, how many of you out there dream? Yeah, we all do, right? In fact, many of us dream every night or every day, whatever is your normal sleep time, depending on work schedules and so forth. But typically, we go through a 90-minute sleep cycle or stages. And this is something that science has got on board with a long time ago. And just measuring, you know, our sleep patterns and our brain waves, as well as just being able to measure our circadian rhythms. And just at what time of the day are we more awake than other times? Or what times during the day are we more, shall we say, sleepy? Like, say, maybe if you've had or if you're having now a high-carb lunch, yeah, guaranteed you'll be a little sleepy in the afternoon. And I'm sure that we've all been there. And that's just something that we have to discover about ourselves. But, you know, certainly taking time out to not just pay attention to our dreams, but also realize that just because our head hits the pillow at night doesn't mean that we are just quickly drifting off to sleep. Because I said, you know, the scientists out there have measured not just how we sleep, but also just going through a normal 90-minute sleep cycle. And this is what I mean by that. In stage one, of our consciousness, we have our alpha brain waves. This is where we're relaxed, but we are awake and we're calm. Okay. But in stage two, which is about 20 minutes, we are sleeping. We've drifted off to sleep. And then in stage three, we're going a little bit deeper in our sleep. And then in stage four, we have more of the delta brain waves, which is a very deep, slow waves, and that lasts about 30 minutes. And then we enter into the dream state or the rapid eye movement, the REM sleep. And that can last anywhere from, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 10 minutes. It depends. But then after that 90-minute cycle, we come back up and then we go back down. And then we come back up and we go back down into our deeper sleep. And this is something that we do every time we sleep. And if you're like me, if you have a pet or two, you know that even dogs dream. And this is the fun part of watching dogs sleep. Now, a dog, their sleep cycle is much shorter than ours. It's typically about every 20 minutes, you know, whereas ours is about an hour, 2 hours, or every 90 minutes. And this is why, no matter where they are, a dog can fall asleep at the drop of a hat, right? I mean, you come home at the end of the day, the dog's jumping around and happy to see you, and maybe you start dinner or whatever it is that you do, and the dog jumps up on the couch and boom, they're out. And it just seems like they can just fall asleep just at any given moment. And we can tell when they are dreaming because their little eyes are rolled back into their heads. And they often tremble or shake and maybe even let out like a little woof or yip, you know, or something. And we might even look at them and just kind of smile and laugh and just say that they are, you know, chasing somebody or chasing a squirrel or whatever it might be. So it's just as they are quick to fall asleep, they are just as quick to wake up, you know, especially if you're trying to be quiet when you're getting a snack for yourself. I mean, they have to be right there. And it doesn't matter. People can come and go and they can still stay asleep. But when you quietly try to open that cheese wrapper or if you try to quickly open a bag of chips, they're right there beside you, as in like, okay, you're going to eat that all by yourself or you're going to give me some. Okay, so certainly dogs dream as much as we do. But anyway, getting off the subject here, dreams are very much a part of our lives. In fact, dreaming is a universal state that everybody experiences. And this, it doesn't matter your age or your culture, your language or your nationality or your ethnicity, your gender, religion, or even spirituality. Well, have you ever noticed that when the subject of dreams comes up in conversation, let's say at a party or a family gathering or wherever you're in a crowd, you know, everybody is all ears. You know, everybody listens intently. Everybody, you know, also starts to remember their most recent dream. And all you have to say is, hey, let me tell you about a dream I had last night. And everybody's right there. Like I said, everybody's ears perk up and they want to know, like, what was this dream? What did it look like? What were the sounds? What were the colors? Were you, filled with joy? Were you flying around? Were you defying gravity? If you were, and I'm not ripping off the Broadway musical Wicked here, but it's kind of that fantasy realm that the dreams take us into, where we can have fun in our dreams. And we all know that, you know, dreams aren't always pleasant, that we can also experience nightmares. And some dreams can be very terrifying. Some dreams can really startle us out of our sleep, where our hearts are pounding and we're trying to catch our breath. And we just swear that that dream was so real that it's just hard to fall back to sleep. And as I said, everybody has dreams. Everybody experiences nightmares. It's just something about being part of the human race, part of humanity. That's something that we all have in common. Well, when I was looking at the title for this broadcast, you know, to sleep, perchance to dream, and oh, what dreams may come, this is actually a famous line in Hamlet, where Hamlet is contemplating whether or not he wants to be or not be. In other words, Hamlet was contemplating suicide. And I know this is a story. It's one of my favorite ones of Shakespeare. And it's just interesting that Shakespeare gave this character, Hamlet, a voice that equated death with sleep and sleep with death, as if sleeping is an escape, or let's say an answer to all of Hamlet's and the rest of the world's problems. You know, I'll just go to bed, I'll sleep, and then, you know, I'll wake up and that's that. And a lot of times we use sleep as an escape, and we just, you know, just something about our unconsciousness where, you know, we forget about, let's say, the day's events, or if we had a bad day or something, we just want to go to bed and we sleep. And, you know, we tend to forget what happened. But as soon as we wake up, the problem is right there, or the issue is right there. And it seems like we just simply cannot get away from it. And yet there's times when the events of the day actually show up in our dreams. I mean, how many times have our dreams have this way of speaking to us about some deeper psychological or emotional, even spiritual issue in our lives? And realistically speaking, as I said, we all dream and we all have nightmares. And I did a little checking, just all down through history, shall we say, of how, you know, the people of ancient times, how do they view dreams? Very interesting indeed. The ancient Sumerians, and we're going back a long, long time here, back in the Neolithic or the Bronze Ages. Well, they viewed their dreams as signs that were sent from the gods. You know, people at that time had their dreams translated by others who were called dream priests, who foretold the dreamer's future. And it's also believed that the practice of this dream incubation was invented during this time. And this dream incubation was something that the people deeply believed in. And every now and then that they would spend time. And for example, a person, let's say, who wanted to contact the gods or to hear from the gods would go to the temple and perform very specific rituals. And then they would purposefully sleep in the temple. And then if they received a dream, then hopefully that dream could be interpreted by one of the priests, and then they would get their answer or whatever it might be. And interestingly enough, I should say, that this practice then spread throughout the ancient world and even had its own influence on the cultural beliefs of other succeeding cultures at the time. You know, for example, the ancient Egyptians, they also viewed dreams as messages from the gods. And they actually created their own book of dreams. And just go off on a little rabbit trail here that this is in print, and this would make a great stocking stuffer. So order your copy today through Amazon. So it's just go ahead and Google like Book of Dreams and Ancient Egyptians, and you'll find it. Kind of interesting there. But if you know anybody who's really into dream analysis and the history of dreams, like I said, this would make a great stocking stuffer. So anyway, the ancient Egyptians, they celebrated rituals, and they would give sacrifices and recite prayers in hopes that their dreams would reveal some sort of fragment of the future, that they would get a glimpse of what's coming their way. And the dreams of the pharaohs attracted the most attention for the rest of the Egyptians because, you know, the pharaohs were seen as gods themselves. And given their status, it seemed perfectly natural that the gods wanted to deliver important messages in the pharaoh's dreams. And so, again, you know, if a pharaoh had a dream, everybody was all ears. Everybody wanted to know, what's the message? What's happening? What's going on? How does it affect us? Well, in the Old Testament, in the Bible, it does contain many stories about God speaking to, let's say, leaders or seers and prophets through dreams. And like many other cultures in the region, the ancient Israelites believed that when we sleep, the veil between the living world and the other world, that veil became very, very thin. And sometimes, God spoke to humanity through their dreams. And there's just a very famous dream interpretation that we have in the Old Testament. It's actually in the book of Genesis. If you happen to, you know, find a Bible and look up the story of Joseph. Joseph was one of the many brothers, but he was sold into slavery by his brothers because he would often go around and interpret dreams. And his brothers were kind of jealous of his popularity, and so they sold him, and the caravan took him to Egypt. And ironically, he became one of Egypt's most powerful men because at one point he even interpreted the dreams of the pharaoh. And as the story goes, the pharaoh had a dream that disturbed him deeply. But he didn't tell anybody. You know, he's just like, look, if anybody out there really knows how to interpret dreams, then they'll know what I'm talking about. And, you know, many dream interpreters came forward and like, nope, that's not it, gone. But Joseph steps forward and he pretty much tells Pharaoh, like, this is the dream that you had. And it was a dream in which Pharaoh had seen there were seven, just say, rather fat cows. And then there were also seven kind of lean and pitiful looking cows. And this was interpreted by Joseph as, okay, Pharaoh, you're going to have seven great years of prosperity, abundance, and then it's going to come a famine. And that famine is going to last 7 years. So through the interpretation, or I should say the symbolism of the seven lean cows, that was interpreted by Joseph as 7 years of famine. And sure enough, that came true. And the Pharaoh took, you know, the interpretation, and he prepared for the 7 years of famine. And he actually saved the people. He saved the land from the famine. And Joseph was rewarded. Well, apart from the ancient Israelites, it wasn't until around, I think it was like 330 or 335 BC, somewhere around that era, that the Greek philosopher Aristotle, he said that human beings are capable of achieving this pure form of wisdom that only comes during sleep. And that's when our minds are, as he put it, liberated. And as a result, you know, in ancient Greece, the dreams played a significant role in any kind of military decision, or let's say how it impacted a family's life or impacted the development of the ancient world. And so the Greek system of dream interpretation wasn't concerned only with predicting the future. It was also used to ensure prosperity in one's life. However, it wasn't until Hippocrates, and he's the one who's regarded by many as the father of modern medicine, he saw dreams as important indicators of, let's say, physical and mental health. He believed that dreams didn't necessarily have a divine connection to them or a divine source, but instead that the dreams came mainly from the human mind. And the ancient Greeks created one of the most significant books about dreams that have ever been written, and they call it The Interpretation of Dreams, which, by the way, is also available through Amazon, so get your copy today. So anyway, as I said, this book is widely regarded as the foundation for many, let's say, contemporary books written about dreams. And all you have to do is just say, let's go on Amazon or Barnes and Nobles or wherever, and just, you know, punch in books about dream interpretations or books about dreams. And you will spend quite a bit of time just trying to sort through the number of books that have been written about dreams. Well, also, in other parts of the world, you know, especially within the Aboriginal tribes of Australia, dreams also hold a special place in society. And this is where they looked at dreams definitely taking on more of a spiritual component or a spiritual aspect. In fact, they believed that they could meet and talk with the ancestral spirits or witnessed creation as it happened. And dreaming was a way of connecting them with the ancestral spirits of the land and of learning about the world and of keeping the dream time alive. And even Native Americans believe that dreams are extensions of reality or a chance to travel to other realms and communicate with the ancestors and spirit guides. And in some instances, children are taught from a very young age to remember their dreams so that they will also use them for spiritual guidance and healing. So certainly the ancient world, even contemporary world, dreams just hold just a quite a fascinating place in our lives. And dreams were also something that caught the attention of Sigmund Freud in his work with the unconscious. And quite ironically, he referred to a person's dreams as the royal road to the unconscious. And now his contemporary at the time, Carl Jung, he had a little different take on it. And he said that the dream is like a little hidden door in the innermost and most secret recesses of one's psyche. And, you know, he went and took it a little bit further, and he says, just exactly what is the unconscious telling us, and for what reason? Well, Freud made a distinction between what the, let's say, a dreamer remembers, or what we would call as the latent content, you know, what we remember about our dreams, and the symbolic meaning of the dream, which he understood as an underlying desire, or let's say a wish or a wish fulfillment. And it was through this understanding that dreams, Freud believed, revealed aspects of ourselves in order to create a psychological balance and a wholeness. So at times he would say that dreams can solve conflict within a person, you know, where dreams can reflect the stress that underlies, say, a daily life and the potential to resolve a conflict that is going on, you know, at the present moment. And Freud also believed that dreams could uncover hidden messages. You know, for example, you know, by digging into the unconscious, Freud also uncovered his patient's hidden fantasies and fears and anxieties and wishes and desires. And whenever his patients talked about their dreams, they would often end up connecting the, lack of a better phrase here, psychological dots. And they would have this aha moment of clarity where, once they understood what was coming up in their dreams, they were able to make connections to the waking life. Okay. So one of the things that is certainly universal in the language of dreams is that dreams are fraught with symbolism and metaphors. And that is how they speak to us. And it's often within the symbols and the metaphors that we experience in a dream is often where our greatest lessons lie. And this is where I come in, in my understanding and my work with dreams. In fact, very common, one of my favorite sayings is that I view dreams as messages about ourselves, from ourselves, to ourselves. Dreams are messages about ourselves, from ourselves, to ourselves. Now, I also believe strongly that God often speaks to us in dreams. Absolutely. I mean, I've experienced this a number of times prior to, let's say, visiting a land that I feel called to release its traumatic energy and any souls that might be caught up with that negative energy. And once I am finished clearing the land and the souls of that negative energy, I often spend more time in the dream world to further process my experiences or to further process that energy. And as I shared weeks ago in another broadcast, that, for the most part, I can sleep for about 3, 4, maybe even 5 hours after there is a land clearing because the energy is so strong. But yet I need that time in the dream world to be able to process everything. And just restore my energy. So for the most part, I kind of take on a gestalt way of understanding dreams. Now, for those who are not familiar with the term gestalt, it's a very distinct way of perceiving and understanding parts of ourselves that once you integrate those parts, the result is something better than before. Okay, well, think of it this way. Think of it as a Big Mac. Okay, remember McDonald's, Big Mac? You know, say it with me. 2 all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, all in a sesame seed bun. Okay, now let's say we have a Big Mac in front of us. Okay, and we can look at all the individual parts of that sandwich. And we could take it apart and just, okay, there's the 2 all beef patties. There's a special sauce, which nobody really knows what that is. But there's the lettuce, the cheese, the pickles, onions, and there's the toast or the sesame seed bun. Do they toast the buns? Maybe they do. But anyway, we can look at all those parts of that sandwich. And each part has its own value. But whenever we place them together, they transform into something greater than the individual ingredients, which is the Big Mac itself. Okay. So in helping clients understand their dreams, I use the parts of the story of the dream and as a means of carrying on conversations with the images and carrying on conversations with the metaphors and looking closely at the symbols and the characters that might pop up during the dreams. But then let's put them back together to help us understand the dream as a whole. And again, here's just a good example of this. Let's say a very common theme that comes up in many people's dreams is that you're being chased in your dream by a scary monster or something extremely frightening. I'll just call it a monster. Okay. You can't see its face, excuse me, but you know it is right behind you. And in a counseling session, I would have you turn around and face that monster. And you're wide awake for this. You're just going to turn around and you're going to just look that monster right in the eye. And I'm going to ask you to describe it. And what does it look like? What does it sound like? What does it smell like? Who does it remind you of? Now, once you've asked those questions, you're going to reduce its size. You're going to shrink the monster, and you're going to place it in a small chair in front of you. And you're going to give it a name. You're going to give it a voice. And you're going to ask it, why are you chasing me? You obviously wanted to get my attention, so now that you have it, what do you want? What is it, you know, what does it want to say to you? And what are some things in your life that you are, let's say, running from? And what makes them terrifying? how fast are you running in the dream? And you could even go a little bit deeper in this and ask yourself, am I running away from something or am I running towards something? So at any rate, you put this little monster now in this little chair in front of you and you carry on a conversation with it and realizing that you are in control of yourself and it the whole time. You can do this for as long as you like, as often as you like. And when you're finished, you can simply dismiss the monster by telling it that you no longer need it or whatever you wish to say to it. Okay, it's your dream, it's your monster, and you can do whatever you want to do with it. However, in the days that follow, I would ask that you would continue to journal your thoughts about the dream and how it still speaks to you. I mean, what else was going on in the dream besides this monster-type figure chasing you and that you were running and that you were terrified? What else was going on? Were there other people in the dream? Were you at a particular location? Were you on a dirt road or were you on the highway or whatever it is? What other details might you remember? So in journaling your thoughts, more and more fragmented pieces of a dream just might be able to be recalled. And also, pay attention to what else is coming up in your life and the timing of such dreams. You know, why now, as opposed to, let's say, you know, 3 months ago or something? And take time to integrate these messages into your life. And we can even ask for further guidance, you know, to look at our lives and to see what needs to be transformed as a result of having such a dream. Well, I would really love to hear your thoughts and your heart on this subject of dreams, or perhaps you would like to share a short dream of your own. So if you'd like to call in, that number again is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Before we get back to our subject of dreams, I just want to share with you just a quick word about next week's show, December 11th, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. And I'll be talking about All I Want for Christmas. Not my two front teeth, but all I want for Christmas is hope. And we'll be looking at the messages of hope that has been, let's say, perhaps scarce throughout 2020, but certainly sharing some stories in which the very best of people had come out in very unique ways throughout 2020 that perhaps isn't always being reported in the news. And so, you know, there's just something about no matter how bad things get or how frustrating things get, there's always a, let's say, a silver thread of hope that we can find. And I'm not talking about some pie in the sky, Pollyanna kind of like, oh, gee, let's just talk about hope. But no, these are real. These are life changing, life transforming times in which, like as I said, the very best of people come out in ways in which really not only speak hope to others, but also spark hope in others. So that's next week. I invite you to join me on December 11th, next Friday. Well, earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about dreams and how often do dreams awaken us to greater things. And we took a look at, you know, just the kind of the characteristics of how dreams were interpreted back in ancient times and just kind of how they evolved down through history. And even how dreams use the language of symbols and metaphors to speak to us. For it is often within the symbols and metaphors experienced in a dream, once we pay attention to them, they can really show us just some powerful, powerful lessons. And I was also talking about my Gestalt style in working with dreams. And as I had shared earlier, that I view dreams as messages that are about ourselves, from ourselves, and to ourselves. And quite often, dreams have a way of nudging us towards healing, especially when loss or pain or trauma keeps us from discovering the very best of ourselves. And so whenever dreams come up, whenever dreams come up, perhaps it is time for those parts of ourselves to be healed and integrated into our lives. And we can also certainly focus on the spiritual aspects of dreams and find greater meaning within them, because we have this unique capacity to put our dreams into the context and the different symbolisms and metaphors of the dreams. We are definitely in a greater position, shall I say, to interpret our own dreams and tap into things that are deeper within ourselves, especially getting in touch with our spirituality. Well, I want to share with you, there was a time, and I'm going back years and years and years now, there was a time in which I was counseling a 14-year-old girl who was just totally beside herself, couldn't make heads or tails of her life. This kid was just filled with clinical depression, and she was, you know, when I started working with her, she was just quite frankly a mess. But we were able to get her on antidepressive medication. She did well on that. She responded. She opened up. She talked a little bit more. And one day she comes into my office. Excuse me, got a little frog in my throat. One day she comes into my office and she sits down. And of course, as I begin every session, so what's going on? How are you doing today? She looked at me and she just kind of didn't have a lot to say. She was just like sadder than usual, if sadder is a word. We talked a little bit about what was going on, and you know, she was fighting with her mom as usual and so on and so forth. And to like on all outward appearances, this kid, this 14-year-old girl, had everything together. Okay. She was a middle child, which comes with its own issues right there, in a good way. Okay. But she was a middle child with, being a straight A student. And she was a cheerleader and she was on student council and these other committees or projects, you know, in her school. But just a little bit of her background is her parents were divorcing. And as with most, hang on a second. Let me get a drink here. Okay, sorry about that. There we go. Now I'm good for another 3 hours. Okay, her background was her parents were divorcing, And as with most middle children, she was kind of trying to hold the family together and keep the peace on both sides. And literally, at one point, she just kind of held out her arms to her sides and said, "I just feel like I have to pull everybody together." And we talked about what was her job and what's not her job, and that's not her role, but yet she feels like she needs to. I mean, typical middle child syndrome. Well, and she always had this recurring story. You know, any typical day she would, you know, she was living with mom and her brother, and she would always fight with mom before school. You know, it could be anything, you name it, they were fighting. And, you know, once she got on the bus, she more or less pulled it back together, and she acted like everything was fine. You couldn't tell that she just had a fight with mom. And according to her, nobody, and I mean nobody at her school, suspected a thing, let alone her friends and her teachers. And she would just go about her day. And like I said, this kid was a straight-A student, so by all outward appearances. And then she said that whenever she'd come home on the bus, she would get out, come in the house, and then she would feel this switch taking over on her, in her, where, yeah, okay, she had to help out to get dinner ready and maybe start the laundry or something like that. But whenever mom came home for the rest of the night, she and her mom would fight. They would argue. They would yell. At times, they would scream. And it usually ended up with this 14-year-old girl, you know, running to her room, slamming the door, and spending the rest of the night in her room working on homework. And the same scenario was just every day. It was just like almost like Groundhog's Day every day. Well, she comes in this one session, and she says, "Do you do anything with dreams?" And of course that perked up my ears, and I just said, "Well, sure, but you know, what are you talking about? Have you had a dream lately?" And she said that, "Well, I keep having this recurring dream. I keep having the same old dream almost every night, and it's been going on ever since the, you know, beginning of the school year." And so I, like, at that point I was hooked, and I was like, "Okay, tell me this dream. What's coming up in your dream? What's going on?" So on and so forth. And she said it was kind of weird because, you know, the dream started when she was at home, you know, with her mom, and you know, like a typical day. But everything was fine with mom. There was no fighting in her dream. There was no yelling or anything like that. And she would put on her little backpack, and then she would get on the bus and go to school, and she would be there at school, and she'd be at her locker getting her books out and everything, and all her friends would come running up to her and say, "Hey, how are you today? Good to see you. You know, can we, let's meet for lunch," and everything. And she said whenever her friends started in like that, she would reach into her locker and pull out this gigantic axe, and then she would start hacking up her friends. And this was all in the dream. She just had no idea where this was coming from. And she left her friends on, you know, like a bloody mess on the floor in the hallway, and put the axe back in her locker, and got her books, and away she went to, you know, to her classes. And that's kind of where the dream stopped, she said. And it was interesting. The only thing I could think of at the time was, you know, wow, this sounds just like an upside down scenario, exactly as to like what her life was not like. And shared that with her. And I just said, you know, isn't it interesting that in real life you fight with mom, but yet you hold it together, you know, in front of your friends, but in your dream you hold it together at home, but yet you're going off on your friends, you're killing your friends, and just like something's out of sort here. And when I said that, she just, you know, she just never put the two and two together. And she was just thoroughly amazed at, like, oh my gosh, am I really doing that? And that started her to, started us actually to have this conversation of, you know, maybe it's time to heal this. You know, maybe it's time to, I know your parents are divorcing and everything, but, you know, you're trying to hold it all together. and maybe that's not working because it's leaking out in your dreams, your frustration, your anger, your angst. And she was certainly blaming her mother, but her dreams told in a different way, told a different story to her. So we continued to talk, you know, week after week. I told her to keep a journal to, you know, further process any residual thoughts or insights. And then one week she came into my office and she had this grumpy face. And I mean, just a real sourpuss looking kind of face. And I had to ask, all right, what's wrong? What's going on? What's been happening? And as clear as a bell, she said, I don't like fighting with mom anymore. It's just no more. It's just not fun anymore. And I was just like, wow, where did that come from? And so I just said, well, okay, can you just kind of fill me in a little bit more on this? And just like, what do you mean? It's no, you don't find any fun in fighting with mom. She's like, no, I just don't, you know, I just don't like doing it anymore. And, you know, I kind of played along with it. And I said, but in the past, you really enjoyed fighting with mom. It's almost as if you're holding her responsible for the divorce. And she just like, no, I don't know. We don't fight like we used to. And, you know, I asked her about holding the family together and, she just, no, I don't need to do that anymore. And, again, I pointed out to her, you know, the insights that she was getting from her dream per se, is really starting to heal, and it's affecting her, not only her perceptions, but also her behavior, you know, that it's, you know, maybe on an unconscious level, this girl was unable to process some things at the moment, but since in her dreams she was able to make sense of it and connect the breadcrumbs, so to speak, she realized just what she was doing, and she was able to change her behavior as a result. And, you know, and again, in the weeks that followed, we continued to process and her depressive-like symptoms got better. You know, she was very compliant with the medication and everything, which is good. And, you know, just over time, it just, you know, she started to heal and get better and better and better. And we started to talk about, how you doing with everything now? Because it feels like you can take the training wheels off and you can kind of go on your own. But if things get overwhelming again, you know, always, by all means, come back. And so we started to stretch out our sessions together, where we started at once a week, and then we went to every other week. And then after a few weeks of that, then how about we go to like once every 3 weeks? And then it was down to once a month. And in the second month of that format, I just said to her, I said, I think you're doing okay. You know, what do you think? And she agreed. She agreed. She no longer, well, as soon as she came in that one day and she said, it's no fun fighting with mom anymore, she never had that recurring dream with the axe and her friends and so forth. It was gone. It just evaporated. And, you know, we reviewed her progress and how she's doing. She still stayed on the medication just to, you know, just keep that chemical balance in check, or imbalance in check, I should say. But she really made just a wonderful transformation in her work, just because she just very nonchalantly one day just said, you know, do you do anything with dreams? And she had the freedom to share, you know, a dream of just what she was experiencing in her life, and she just had no idea how to go about it. But she did a lot of great work, and just very proud of her. And I just often wonder how the rest of her life unfolded, just exactly where her life took her as a result of healing through that dream. So dreams are very powerful for us, and we are wise to pay attention to them, even if it frightens us, even if we can't make heads or tails of our dreams. And we, you know, by all means, please keep a dream journal to just kind of jot things down. even if it's gibberish in the middle of the night when you get awake and you're just like, okay, well, you know, I'll just type a few things out or you know, on your iPad or whatever you have. But one of the worst things we can do is after a dream, if we wake up in the middle of the night, to tell ourselves, well, okay, I'll remember that come morning. I don't need to write it down. That's a big mistake because we will forget our dreams. And so jotting them down has a way of just reinforcing them. Just a little bit of the details. You don't have to recreate the whole dream, but just enough that you can go back in and recall it. And this does wonders for, you know, many of us who are just fascinated by our dreams and have learned to listen to our dreams and to pay attention to those messages. And as I said before, even though I gestalt the dreams with people and my own, I am still a very firm believer that God speaks to us in and through our dreams. And we can clearly see the patterns, or I should say, the hand of God in our lives when it comes to how our dreams unfold. And so if you have never done so, one thing else that we can certainly do is we can always set an intention to dream before we fall asleep. And let's say that if you want to gain spiritual growth or insight or peace or wisdom, ask that before you speak. I mean, most of the time we want to quickly jump into bed and fall asleep, or we're watching TV and we drift off to sleep. But instead, set an intention before you fall asleep. And so, you know, that intention can be spoken out loud. It could be a thought. It could be written down. Whatever you feel most comfortable with. Your dreams are yours. And that means you are very much in control. You have a choice in the matter. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and I have enjoyed sharing this time with you this Friday afternoon, talking about dreams and so forth. So keep dreaming. Keep understanding and listening to your dreams, because they are definitely wonderful parts of ourselves, parts that can be integrated into our lives. So I invite you to join me next week, same time, same day. And in the meantime, please be safe, behave yourselves, and as always, may you have sweet dreams.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.